Previously.tv Podcast Network.
They're blindly loyal to Warren Jeffs. They need him to justify everything that they've believed all their lives. He validates their very life.
A&E signals authoritatively to enter a cult studies lane as Warren Jeffs, Prophet of Evil, joins Leah Remini and a Jonestown special in the network's upcoming lineup. And Patrick Brady joins me, his only wife as of this writing, to discuss the special, plus a rundown of the best Mormon-adjacent true crime properties in The Plotter Presents, episode 45. Welcome back to The Blotter Presents, Previously.tv's take on TV true crime. Per the Mormon name generator, which you will find in our show notes, I'm your host, Aldora Young Elizabeth, and I'm joined again this week by Aiden Carrick. Just kidding, we're Gentile Sarah D. Bunting and Ban Patrick Brady. Jeez. Ban Patrick Brady. Hi, honey.
Hello there. I'm a Ban. It's good to see you.
Oh, geez. We adored a couple of Warren Jeffs properties in the service of preparing this podcast episode for you. So let's get into the unfortunately named, in this instance, Most Wanted. Warren Jeffs, Prophet of Evil, aired on A&E as you're listening to this 2 days ago. Monday night, it was a 2-hour special at 9 p.m. We watched a screener that seemed like it was only an hour, so maybe some interviews were cut out of the special. Here is the brief on Warren Jeffs, in case you are lucky enough not to have heard of this person and taken many showers in lie. Warren Steed Jeffs is the president of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and a convicted felon slash child molester serving a sentence of life plus 20 years currently in a Texas prison. His prison term is the result of a conviction in 2011 of 2 felony counts of child sexual assault. So, yeah, you can probably figure out where this is going, but just in case you're not familiar with how the fundamentalist church differs from more mainstream LDS. Let's hear a clip.
Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or FLDS, traces its roots back more than 100 years ago, when the Mormon Church formally prohibited polygamy. Those that continued the practice were excommunicated from the church. Over the next several decades, expelled polygamists banded together, eventually settling in Short Creek, a strip of land that borders the states of Arizona and Utah. Branding themselves the FLDS, the church based their beliefs on the idea that polygamy is a direct edict from God.
Polygamy to them is an absolute requirement for salvation. They don't believe they can be saved in heaven if they don't have at least more than one wife.
At least more than one wife. Shudder. So Dan, had you heard of Warren Jeffs? Were you familiar with this story and the sort of ongoing fight to bring him to some sort of earthly justice?
Yeah, I had heard of this and to some degree. I didn't until we watched these fully immerse myself within his evil, but I had definitely heard of him and, you know, thought that he was bad. I think that that's probably the least one can say about him at this point.
Yeah. How did you feel that this property, Prophet of Evil, did at sort of giving the background of both the FLDS story and Jeff's creepy rise to power? Did you think it did a good job of that? I thought it was a little rushed, but pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, how much exposition do you get into? I mean, there's a whole lot to talk about, mainly because there's just one amazing thing after another amazing thing that happens in this gentleman's surprisingly short tenure leading the church. But I mean, they did a pretty good job with the brushstrokes in the back to sort of back up what was going on. But it was kind of amazing to watch it and then to sort of look back over my notes and realize that he, quote unquote, came to power in 2001 and by 2005 was already being charged with rape of a nephew, by the way.
And that was more of like a conspiracy to commit rape, basically.
No, this was, the rape with a nephew was different than the rape of, or the conspiracy to commit rape because he allowed someone to marry an adolescent.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah. There were a lot of different
cases.
There's
so many.
He ended up, I think he was initially charged in Utah and sentenced in Utah, and then his appeal was successful because the judge had instructed the jury incorrectly, at which time there was already a much bigger and more serious investigation underway in Texas and Utah and Arizona and a couple of other states, I think, were like,
everywhere he went.
Texas will hang you for ganking a pack of gum from the drugstore, so we're going to let Texas handle this. So before we get into his multi-state legal travails and the fact that at one point he literally was on the FBI most wanted list, nestled in between Osama bin Laden and Whitey fucking Bulger. And I think even Whitey...
It's in between the two, so that's right behind a mass murderer.
Yeah.
And before the guy who was a mass murderer of people in Boston.
Yeah, great job. Cool.
Yeah.
But let's hear a little about what Prophet of Evil thinks made him a monster as a kid in clip 3.
Outside his home, though, things were different.
He was flimsy, he was frail. Because he was clumsy and because he was like he was here, he was made fun of a lot. He was almost persecuted, I guess you might say.
Warren responded in his own unique way.
He was a tattletale. Really enjoyed seeing other people in pain, other people in trouble.
But tattletaling wasn't Warren's only mischievous tendency. From an early age, Warren also earned a reputation for being voyeuristic, especially around members of the opposite sex.
One of the aunts told me about when he would come to visit their ranch, they would have to tape paper over the windows and put towels under the doors because Warren was a voyeur.
That was Sam Brower, who wrote the book Prophet's Prey, on which a documentary from a few years was based. You will find a link to my coverage of that in the show notes. Warren apparently was like everybody's little star as a kid, but like he's not the only brother.
Yeah, there were several brothers, but he was apparently the golden child chosen by his father and his mother as being, you know, the one who is going to, I'm trying to remember, I think there's...
He survived, he was born quite premature, so I think maybe that was part of it.
That could have been.
Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, but basically he was given free rein. He was never guilty of anything. His parents didn't punish him. He was allowed to do what he wanted, and they would blame other people for things that he did.
Does this sound familiar?
Yeah. I'm really biting my tongue right at the moment. I know I'll get into it later on, but this is very similar
to other
people.
Let's just say that it bears a certain resemblance to current executive leadership at the national level, and leave it there for now.
Okay.
But I don't think whatever else Donald Trump is guilty of that this documentary, at least the screener that we saw, did not get into the suspicion that once his father, Rulon, and this is why I actually went looking for a Mormon name generator, because I was like, where do they get this shit? Like, Mormons aren't the only people who slap their kids with weird names, but as someone who has like a very common name, I'm kind of like, Rulon, like, where do you even where do you even get that? So there is a Mormon name generator. Again, it's in our show notes. And Rulon was the prophet of FLDS. And that's Rulon Jeffs, his dad. And I think Rulon's first or like lead wife is Warren's mom. Rulon had a stroke and Warren just started sort of consolidating his power. And there is definitely the implication in other coverage of this that he hastened Rulon's demise so that clip four.
He got up in a priesthood meeting shortly after his father's death and said, "I'm here to tell you men, hands off my father's wives." And that was his way of laying claim on the wives that he wanted.
According to estimates, Rulon had as many as 75 widows. Moving into his father's home, Warren spent the next several months marrying more than 20 of his former stepmothers.
"I'm sorry, I know those women were not his mother, but to turn around and marry your father's own wives, even polygamous wives, that's just sick."
Yeah, I mean, that's Randy Mankin, who runs and I think is like, you know, the one man newspaper in El Dorado, Texas, which is where Jeffs et al. Sort of set up a compound. Not the only compound.
Yeah, their last compound or their latest compound.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where Texas was able to make a solid case that like there were 15-year-olds who were on their second pregnancy and they're like, "Okay, look."
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I mean, according to the documentary, Jeff's married 17 of his father's wives in 8 days.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, this guy, again, another parallel to what's happening now in America. This guy, I mean, the FLDS believes in certain things that are uncommon. But he began to remove the other strictures in the order to consolidate his power. So he started reassigning wives. He became the authority to tell who could get married and stuff like that. He began to cut off
rewarding older like deacons, and I mean older, like 65 with 16-year-olds and then younger. And
he cut off the
he's also accused of molesting a bunch of his like nieces and nephews and cousins when he was running the Alta Academy. There was like a notorious bathroom that he would take them to during services.
Ugh. Yeah. He cut off the order from the outside world so they couldn't get access to the internet or television or anything like that. He started expelling all of the other rival young men.
Yeah. These were called the Lost Boys. And I think one of his nephews, Brent, a book called The Lost Boys. Brent was
he was the one who was raped. He was the one who charged him with rape.
Not the one, just the one that brought like that. And I think a lot of them had to sue in civil court to get any kind of justice for anything. They basically like there was like a man overage because Jeffs was just like taking all the wives. Any woman who was like over the age of 10. So for any infraction that it was like, "Oh, you walked past a Gentile house where a TV was playing, you must have looked at it guilty." And then they'd just be like driven to the edge of wherever they were living with the clothes on their backs and told good luck.
That was it. In 2004, this is 3 years after he took power, he was expelling like practically all the men.
Yeah.
Which got him in trouble because some men refused to go. So that created some national attention.
Chatwin, is that his name? The guy who had the press conference and was like the shitting, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, thank God he started to speak up. You know?
We heard him earlier in the clip about Warren as a kid. He was talking about how he was frail. So,
yeah. This echoes Scientology right down the line, in that they expel you and they immediately cut you off from your family, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there are echoes of aberrant society and just about everything that this man did.
We've
even gotten to the rape yet, and we haven't even gotten to the fact that the wives got younger and younger and younger.
Well, all right, let's get that over with then. First of all,
okay,
after they finally got a search warrant, because I think there was some, like, it turned out to be a prank call, but they thought it was
a prank call.
A call from inside the compound from ostensibly a 16-year-old who's like, I'm, you know, pregnant and I was forced to marry. I don't think she was even forced to marry Jeff, she said. But then there was this whole, like, they're like, all right, well, let's get all the kids off the compound. And they needed like 15 school buses because there were like 350 children in various like states of inappropriate, but whatever. So among the discoveries they made is in clip 5. And folks, this won't be the last trigger warning, but yeah, this is pretty gross.
Once inside, they made an alarming discovery, an altar-like bed in the middle of an all-white sanctuary.
It was obviously a ceremonial type bed. Whatever happened on it happened in front of a large group of people.
In their search, police uncovered detailed schematics for the bed's construction. It was designed by Warren Jeffs, and its alleged purpose shocked even the most seasoned police investigator.
That's the bed on which he consummated his marriages with his underage brides.
The sexual assault would be conducted in unison, hand in hand, with a religious experience.
Not only is this happening, collective barf.
People have to watch it, and he also videotaped it.
Yeah, and audiotaped it. There's definitely a like Handmaid's Tale note to that that's vomitous. And we will have a snap in our visual aids, which you can see on Twitter and Facebook at Blotter Presents, both places. Nothing is happening on the bed. It's just investigators photographing it and looking like they're about to vom, which word. But the vominess, oh God. I mean, you'll also see a picture of him, like, it's like it's footage from prison of like visiting day, and like he's on like the video phone and some of his wives are there and like holding up a little baby, and he's like, coochie coo, like that's probably your sister and cousin and granddaughter, like, ooh, barf. Anyway. There was, one of the talking head interviewees on A&E made a point of saying that this was really like roof stoof for the jury to get through. And, you know, he, in addition to his being a weirdo and his closing statement being basically staring at jurors and then being like, I'm at peace. And they were like, enjoy that in jail. They were played audio tape of some consummation. If you feel like you might vomit or are triggered by the sound of, I don't know, me and Dan vomiting, you might want to skip ahead over this next clip. Good luck to everyone.
But there were actually audio tapes of Warren having sex with multiple underage girls at a time in that temple at the ranch.
On one tape was a recording of Jeff's ritualistic rape of his 12-year-old bride.
The things of this body, this flows through priesthood. So focused and submissive.
I would say there are no words, but there's a couple. One is the F word and the other one is barf. I mean, yeah. There's just And this is actually not the most upsetting audio clip in a property devoted to the crimes against God and humanity of Warren Jeffs, but we're not going to clip that other one because I can't even
go there again.
You hear the 12-year-old in that one, and it's not good. I am interested to hear from you listeners about what actually aired, because again, this was supposed to be a 2-hour event. We saw what seemed like a, well, now I don't want to use the word focused ever again, but it seemed like a very like tightly edited and a little rushed in places package. It did cover a lot of ground. It was informative and good. I hadn't really thought about this case in a few years, and it sort of brought me back up to speed effectively, I thought. But I'm interested to hear what actually aired, so I hope you guys will weigh in on the forums. That's previously.tv/forums. I think even what we saw was like sufficiently compellingly oogie that, I mean, I think it was well done. A&E is pretty pro at this stuff by now, but I would like to know what actually aired. Dan, did you find this effective at what we saw?
I guess I can disclose at this point in time that afterward we looked at another documentary that you can talk about if you want to, that went into more depth, and simply because it was they had a lot more time. I mean, television, it's a time factor. You simply don't have all the time to do
well,
things.
Well, that's the thing. Like, what actually will have aired? We're speaking about this on Monday morning, and the thing is airing tonight, and it's supposedly 2 hours. We saw a 42-minute screener, which was, again, great, jam-packed, but, you know.
I mean, it gets across all the things that this guy did, and you realize as you sort of look back at it that he did it amazingly quickly. I mean, where he totally took over the power of this place. Now, this order is set up where someone is a prophet, and you, the prophet directly from God. So his speech is the word of God. So anyone who believes in this particular sect of religion, of this religion, has to take him at his word and do everything that he says. But he consolidated that power even more than it had ever been done before, it appears, from the documentary.
Well, and you do sort of wonder, well, we'll get into that in our next section, I think, a little bit. But as we heard in that clip up top, I'm not entirely sure I agree with, and that was Randy Mankin of the El Dorado paper, who did our leadoff clip. I'm not sure I agree that it's entirely that, like, they make an affirmative decision to continue believing in Jeffs and his teachings. I think it's more something that we hear about in that other documentary, which, why don't we just talk about it now? For our cold case section, we're doing something a little different, which is to talk about a few of the best other Mormon adjacent true crime properties. This is a very incomplete list. But we hope that you will tweet at us, Facebook us, and chime in on the forums about other similar properties that we and your fellow listeners should check out. The documentary that we keep referring to, and you will find a link to my coverage of that in the show notes, it aired on Showtime at the end of 2015, and it's Amy Berg's Prophet's Prey. Based sort of loosely on and featuring Sam Brower, who wrote the book Prophet's Prey. He's also in the A&E documentary that's airing now. We watched that directly after watching the A&E screener, although I had seen this before. I did kind of feel like you don't need both, and that maybe you should go with the Showtime version, even though it's, you know, significantly more disturbing because it's, you know, premium cable. Would you agree? Do you need both, or would you just pick the Showtime one?
I would pick the Showtime one. Not to knock A&E. I think A&E did a fine job, but I think if you're going to really get a sense of the evil, you really need to go ahead and take a look at the Showtime version, because that really tells you demonstrably how horrible this human being was.
There's going to be a lot of, you know, unpleasantness, I guess, but the audio tape that they choose for that project is significantly more horrifying, because you hear the girl and her voice is like, she's a child. Like, she's a child anyway, but it's, you know, like, my voice was like this when I was 12 or 13. Her voice is not like, it's just this little, I mean, it's a child speaking, and you're just like, and what she says, I'm not even gonna go there. It's very affecting. I would say also that Prophet's Prey has, as one of its interviewees, which Prophet of Evil does not, John Krakauer, who of course wrote another entry on this list, Under the Banner of Heaven. That is an excellent book that my esteemed colleagues and work spouses, Tara Ariano and Dave Cole, were visiting me back in the day. This book had just come out. Tara was in the middle of reading it. It was like reading passages aloud. And then they left town, and I like kept the book and read it in a morning. Krakauer is always good, but this was excellent. I don't remember the exact parameters of the case. I only remember that one of the defendants' explanations for why he did what he did is that the angel Moroni had entered him, had entered his anus and possessed him. So good detail, buddy.
Thanks. Yeah.
I thought I owned this book. I do want to point out to myself, and Dan can attest, I turned the house upside down trying to find it so that he could.
Well, she immediately started looking for it, wandering around, checking all the bookshelves, and we have quite a number of bookshelves, all her books, because I can't read, to try and get it.
You just position yourself downhill for me, and all the good true crime rolls onto you. You're
exactly.
Welcome.
Yes. I think that the difference between the two documentaries that's very important, it's very important to America today, is the fact that, and I'm still not getting on my soapbox, I promise, is the fact that the Showtime documentary does point to more complicity from the town and the rest of the people. I mean, they allowed this man to change and pervert even more their religion to his ends. And I'm sure they did it, and they still do it today, because his brother is the quote-unquote bishop who still receives orders from him, from jail. He, the prophet. So the bishop is still running things in these compounds that they have in these small towns.
Well, and that's the thing. That's one of the disturbing things, is like, you know, Jeff's, like, they cut the head off the monster, and then the monster just keeps lurching around, like, you know, because really, what else are they supposed to do? Like, where else are they supposed to go? Like, you sort of think in your mind, maybe not consciously, but you just sort of assume, once this guy is in jail, that this entire community will be like, oh, he's the worst, and take off these prairie dresses. And P.S., how did they decide who wears which Easter egg color on which day? Is there like a hierarchical family assignment? Listeners, if you know anything about this, please tweet at me, Water Presents. But like, of course that's not what happens, that there's not this like cinematic realization by however many thousand people that they're like, because partly Jeffs has successfully convinced them that, you know, has like taken them into his persecution complex. I was like, see, I told you that, you know, the unsaved don't get it. Like, you right, know, pull right. up the drawbridge. And second of all, yeah, which he's thrilled with. But then these people have been living with this and only this. No TV, no internet, no mall. They're not allowed to have pets. Nothing, but...
all they're supposed to do is to listen to his bullshit that yeah. he has taped for
he,
them.
He like, keeps sending them sermon tapes from prison, and he wrote a book, and he's a big racist, which they don't really get into here. But on top of everything else, he's a bigoted shitbrick. Like, could there be one thing that you don't do that's bad? Like, do you also double park shittily in Bay Ridge? Because, like, there's a long list of things.
That's the worst.
Seriously. death penalty. Just kidding.
Yes.
But they make the point in the Amy Berg film that, you know, the wives are home 24/7 with the kids, and their job is to make sure the Jeffs' rules are followed, and they are.
Yeah, and the husbands do it too. I mean, and
the ones that are left,
But you know why they're left, and you know why this whole thing became successful is because there were powerful people who were the men, and this is a great situation for them. Oh, I get to have more than one wife. I get to have several wives. Oh, they get to, as I age, they get younger. Oh, this is absolutely perfect.
Oh, sure. Oh,
I mean, come on.
Forget.
Let's be serious. This is complicity. From people, there is no tyrant that rises alone, you know, and he can, if he controls the media and he controls the message, hello, Fox News, that's how, I mean,
here's the soapbox.
I'm sorry, it's starting to come out, but that's how this shit starts, and that's how it grows, you know, and he starts tearing down anything else that was quote unquote, considered normal. So he gets rid of rivals, and he gets rid of he starts making other things illegal, and to the point in time that he controls everything.
And then
but he does that because people allow him to do it.
Let's not forget that he also increased tithing.
Yeah.
And then eventually it wasn't even tithing, it's just you turn over your paycheck. So
all of
that completely undercuts, like, anyone who wants to leave, like, you have no resources. You
again, just like Scientology.
Yeah, just like Scientology. And this is how cults thrive, is that they make it an us versus them situation, and then they make sure that you can never talk to them and have no money to pay them to escape and the whole thing.
They also limit education. You're only taught a few things, which is the righteousness of the church. Again, just like Scientology.
And then,
so that
after eighth grade,
if you escape,
you're done.
Yeah, after eighth grade, you're done.
Yeah. So yeah, that documentary is distressing and very effective. Amy Berg has done a couple of other documentaries that I enjoyed also. I think this one is very well made, and John Krakauer is a key component and swears a lot, which, as you know, I enjoy.
It's very good.
The other two properties that I would mention, there's a book called Salamander, The Story of the Mormon Forgery Murders. A guy named Mark Hoffman, under a number of names, was forging what were supposed to be foundational documents. From Brigham Young, and like the Salamander letter. The book is written by the reporters who covered the case back in the mid 80s. And it is not, you know, like, it's perfect for this because it's a fairly complicated case. But it's also just very straight ahead prose that doesn't try to be literary, which I appreciate. It's written by Alan Roberts and Linda Sillitoe. This is not fundamentalist stuff. This is just like, LDS like apocrypha. And then when the circle started closing on this guy who was sort of like forging things and pyramid scheming about it, he left a series of bombs to eliminate those who might tattle on him, and so that it proceeds from there. If you're into like document forging and question document investigations, this is excellent. And even if you're not, this isn't too dry. So I would recommend that. You can find it in in the true crime section of your local used bookstore. It has a purple cover. Or you can borrow mine.
Under Buntnip.
Buntnip, yes. Document forging and explosives. Actually, I'm not a big explosives fan. and the final entry on my list is Norman Mailer's The Executioner's Song. Mailer is a person. Well, I would say I wouldn't let him use my bathroom, but actually, at this point, it would be a pretty impressive trick if he showed up needing to pee, so... But yeah, Norman Mailer as a person, problematic. The Executioner's Song as a legendary text that, you know, most people don't consider, I think, true crime, but they kind of should. This is Mailer's best work, I think, and I've read enough. His tonal control and like changing the quality and the diction of the prose when he shifts to another third person point of view, like to Gary's girlfriend or to Gary's uncle. It's excellent. I also read the Michael Gilmore, but I'd like listened to it and the reading of it was a little annoying. Like I remember complaining about it out loud while listening to it on the train and my fellow passengers were like, okay. That one's called Shot Through the Heart. It's fine. But Norman Mailer, I mean, he and Capote, like, you know, that's the bar to which I think everyone in prose, at least, or in long form prose is aspiring. And if you guys never read it or were like Mailer gross, try it. Just try it because it's really good. And if you have any thoughts on the film, which starred Tommy Lee Jones, I think.
Yes.
Let me know. Because I never saw it and kind of was like, I don't know if I want to go there. But again, definitely always looking for more material to read and put in my eyeballs. So if you guys have other Mormon adjacent true crime properties that I should be checking out, that's at Blotter Presents on Twitter and Facebook or on our forums. Dan, any plans to check out any of these that you have not seen?
I definitely am going to find a copy of the Crack Hour book. I've enjoyed him in the past, so I'm definitely going to look to read this once again. I'm very intrigued by, I've always been intrigued by how cults began and everything like that. So I'm very intrigued by what he has to say about the behavior of not only the evil man Jeffs, but also the people around him, and how this thing became what it was. So I'll definitely check out that, and I'll probably read the Executioner's Song, which I never did. I've read excerpts.
Yeah, that I will be able to find. We have our books organized by color because we're, you know, those we're people. And I'm almost positive that it's maroon, but we moved in the last year and some things got misfiled. Like, I seriously was like...
I take that personally. I sat there and basically every book is the right color going through shades. It's really very nice.
Except for that one with the green and the pink together. Was there a little preppy thing happening?
I don't know. It's just how it worked out.
Okay. It fit on the shelves. This is how husbands decide to get another wife. Unwarranted criticism of reshelving. Next thing you know, there's two ladies with front bumps and long dresses in the kitchen. All right, okay. Well, Dan, thank you for coming back on the show. Please don't marry anyone else. Before lunch. Listeners, coming up, we have the Huff household, Allison Lowe and Chris on Unsolved. We have Love and Hate Crime. And who knows what else awaits us on The Blotter Presents. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, as I said, at Blotter Presents. I'm Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. And my co-host here and in life is Dan Patrick Brady. He's on Twitter at Dan Patrick Brady. Please try not to marry him when I'm not looking, and we'll talk to you next time.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.